This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. I'm speaking today to Yasmin Badmanabhan. She is a writer and poet, and she is joining us on our third episode of Feminist Fridays. And today we will be discussing women's narratives. Yasmin, welcome. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for joining us. So, Yasmin, I was just wondering, do you identify as a feminist writer?
Okay, I do identify as being a feminist writer, but I do want to clarify that I'm not just a feminist writer, but I am an intersectional feminist writer. So there is that distinction that I would like to make. As for a writer, I'm not a career writer. I do write on different platforms and different genres and different mediums. And a lot of what I write and in my nonfiction work, it's more feminist in nature, where else my fiction writing is, or my poetry is not necessarily feminist.
Okay.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. But I guess, obviously, because the series is called Feminist Writings.
Yes.
The focus is a bit more on the feminist-focused writing that you do, I suppose. So could you explain, what does it mean actually to be a feminist writer?
I guess we all know what it means to be a writer. And each writer, what they do is they write from their perspectives and through their lens, which mine happens to be a feminist lens. So when I do write in forms of essays or when I do tend to write poems that are a bit more gender related, then they talk about issues that are more personal and issues that pertain to women and the struggles that women face. I am saying women here because I identify as a woman and I write from the perspective of a woman.
So when you say that you write about women's issues, what sort of issues do you like to tackle in your writing?
Issues that I tend to keep writing over and over again are issues that women face and issues that we often hear about in our news. These are issues such as gender equality, women in the workforce, women and sex, gender-based violence, and also stereotypes and power and privilege. So these, I mean, they're all interrelating in some ways. And at one point when I was writing for the Malaysian Insider, I told myself I'm not going to write about sex or violence against women. And the day I mentioned that and something came up and I do not know, some minister said something or something, someone did something. And there I was again writing down another piece on that very issue. So every time when I tried to go away, because I also like doing not to say reviews, but writing about films and looking at the gender dynamics within films as well. Whenever I try to do that, something else will come up. And I know it's so when you are in this kind in this situation that we are in this environment that we are in Malaysia, and you can't help but to address all these pertinent things that are coming our way, because it affects my life, it affects the lives of people around me. And this is what I believe, or from my perspective, what a feminist writer does. We shine light on injustices, on human rights violations, on inequality. And it's not just about women, though. We have to realize that the big bad that, you know, we always hear patriarchy. It's not just patriarchy, the big bad.
The evil,
evil. And it does not just affect women or girls. It affects men as well. It affects people of all gender. It affects people of different identities and orientation. So we have to, it's not us versus them. It's more of it versus all of us.
The it being?
The it being the big bad.
The big bad. Okay. Just for clarity's sake.
Yeah.
And do you find that there is a lack of, let's call it feminist writing, well, in Malaysia in particular?
In Malaysia, I would say that in the mainstream, you don't really see it, mm-hmm. right? Which is why I was very thankful to the team at Malaysian Insider for giving me that platform, because what I was doing, my first column, I said that, you know, this is what I'm going to write about. I'm a feminist writer. I'm a intersectional feminist writer. And this column is going to, you know, look at the issues that we are facing here in Malaysia from an intersectional feminist perspective. You know, and it was not easy, but, you know, for a year and a half, I had that platform. And now you have this new, the G blog, which is creating a space for Malaysian voices, mm-hmm. Feminist voices to be heard. And you also have some writers on the Malay Mail online who are writing from a feminist platform. And you also have, you know, there's always Marina Mahathir who has good things to say. Mm-hmm. So there are, but there are very, very, very few avenues for us or for feminist writers to write or given a platform. Yeah.
Okay. To focus on feminist issues.
Yes, exactly.
Have you, you know, ever experienced harassment when you were writing about feminist issues?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It happened very fast. I mean, I have been writing since I was a kid, mm-hmm. but I never had that guts to, you know, send my work out to publishers or even go for readings. Because I always felt, you know, the whole imposter syndrome that which women tend to, you know, experience more than anyone else. So finally, when I did start writing and, you know, I got that platform on the Malaysian Insider, and I was like, okay, there's some, you know, it came out this whole, like, someone said that, you know, men should hit their wives. And I was like, hey, you know, it's not just the Muslim issues. You read the Bible and it says that, you know, wives should be submissive to the husbands.
Yes.
The husband, you know, and, you know, me being a former Christian. Yeah, I call myself culturally Protestant.
Okay.
Because, yeah, so that's what I am. And I said, like, hey, you know, don't just keep pointing fingers at those. You should, even the Bible says all these things. And, oh my goodness, it went mad. I had, like, I was tracking the comments. There was over 100 comments and it was all angry. Everyone was angry. I started getting hounded on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And on Facebook, I started getting all these messages from random strangers, even when my husband shared the article. Mm-hmm. And he did not say that it was his wife, right? Okay. And then there were people commenting on his Facebook saying, oh, this woman, you know, does not know anything. She must be in a very bad relationship. And some people commented that, she must be, her husband must be hitting her, you know, or she needs to be whacked and blah, blah, blah. And I genuinely freaked out because I was like, oh my God, my mom is going to go to church and people are going to read this and they're going to tell her, like, hey, your daughter is doing this or she's false testifying or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that day, that was the first time though I felt genuine fear, because it was no longer in the unknown internet. It was getting very close.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I actually went offline for the first time in my online life. I went offline for 24 hours.
Yep.
And that was scary. And there was another time when I wrote about my choice of being child-free, and a few men who posted that, you know, why are you airing these views? They are your personal views. Keep them at home. And in the following week, I addressed these particular comments and telling them, you know, why did you say this? Because if it was a man who was airing these views, you would not ask them to keep quiet or keep it at home. But it's because I am a woman. I am saying something that is not the norm.
Yep.
Which woman does not want to have a child? You know, there's something inherently wrong with a woman when she says such a thing. But even though I had, you know, listed down why I had made that decision, Mm-hmm. So there were trolls. There was this one person who would always troll. And at one point, I just stopped caring, I think.
Did they threaten you with violence? Was that something that, you know, among all those nasty comments, those 100-over comments, was there violence as well?
There definitely was, because there were some that said that, you know, her husband should shut her up. The husband should hit her. And while I was reading this, my husband was right next to me. And I was just like, dude, this is just not me. It's also you being dragged into it. And it was, why would something that I write, which is, I do not know if it's factual or not, but I am referring to a text. And I am discussing a written text that a lot of people believe in. And yet, instead of taking it constructively or even thinking about it in an analytical and logical way, first reaction is anger. How dare you question my belief?
Yeah.
If you question my belief, that means you are wrong, because my belief is right. And I believe that is why there is so much anger and harassment towards not just feminist writers, but women writers or writers who write or have views that go against the norm. Because you are challenging people's beliefs, people's ideologies. And regardless of what side or which side you are on, there are going to be people who feel challenged by it. And violence is always the easiest way for them to respond. Because violence shuts people up.
Yes, it strikes fear into people. And so, you know, you will stop writing what you're writing, because obviously, what's the point, right? You would think.
Exactly.
Well, I'm sorry you had to go through that.
Oh, it's okay. It was I think it's a rite of passage.
Mm-hmm.
I will take it that way.
You know, it shouldn't be a rite of passage. It's, you know, being threatened with violence. It's not right.
It shouldn't be. But at the same time, what that particular incident revealed to me was, because, I mean, let's look at the situation that we are in Malaysia right now. Mm-hmm. Everything, it's so much easy for us to keep blaming it on the conservative movements and so on. But what we fail to realize that regardless of what religion we are, what race we are, our education background, our class, our ethnicity, where we live, and even our social class, these are things that are very universal. Mm-hmm. Violence against women or gender-based violence.
Yep.
And the moment a woman or someone who is not your assertive male voices their opinion, who makes a stand, the first reaction is to put them into place, put them to their place.
Yep.
And this cuts across the board, regardless of who you are, what religion you profess to be, if you're atheist or you're not, you know, it's the same.
I'm speaking today to Yasmin Bhatnanandan. She is a writer and a poet, and we are discussing the challenges of being a feminist writer. Coming up after the break, we find out more about Voices, which was a women's writing workshop that Yasmin helped to put together. You're listening to Feminist Fridays on Live and Learn. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's Feminist Fridays, and we are on our third episode. And today I'm speaking to Yasmin Bhatnanandan. She is a writer and a poet, and we are discussing, you know, the experiences and the struggles of being a feminist writer. So, Yasmin, you actually started a women's writing workshop called Voices. As per the description of it, it sought to create a safe space for women's experiences to be heard. Is that accurate?
It is, actually. There's two parts to Voices. When I first created Voices, it was in 2014. It was in conjunction with the Georgetown Literary Festival. That year's format was to bring out women's narratives, women's stories of or what is called lived realities, yeah. And so these were women. What we did was we got four women writers. We matched them up with four women from the Penang community whose stories I felt needed to be shared. Mm-hmm. And out of the four, one was a single mother who was continuing her studies, whose husband actually divorced her because she wanted to pursue her master's. So she had to raise two kids and pursue her master's while working. So that was that story. And another one was an immigrant wife who married a man of a different race and religion, came to Malaysia, and how she had to serve his family. And while he was having affairs all over, and she had to still stay in there, and she was still stuck in that situation. But she found strength in her religion and in her children. Mm-hmm. There was that. There was the third story was of this Muslim woman who actually, whose case was quite a landmark case, and she won in the Sharia court against her ex-husband, who ended up having to pay alimony. And when he failed to pay alimony, he was arrested and jailed. So that was that. And the fourth story was, I can't remember, it's been so long. Oh yeah, it was a Mandarin story of this girl, or this young lady whose parents always told her that she amounted to nothing because she was not slim, pretty, or fair.
Okay.
And even though she's successful now, and she's an activist and doing real, on the ground work with the grassroots, and there she was in depression. So it was a conversation between her and her psychiatrist talking about going down to the root of her depression. Was it went back to when she was a little girl and she was told that she would amount to nothing because she was not pretty or slim. Amazing. And that story was written, or that narrative was written in Mandarin. Mm-hmm. And it was read out in Mandarin. So these were four writers who interviewed the women, and then they wrote their stories, but with a creative element, and their details and all identity that would link these narratives to the women were, you know, removed. So that, because these were sensitive stories, women who are still in those situations. So we did that exercise. And in the second year, what happened was we connected with Bernice Cholley, the festival director of Georgetown Literary Festival. And we invited her to run a writer's workshop. And so this was the 2 days writer's workshop for the voices. So day one was introduction to gender and intersectionality. We talked about power and privilege because we wanted the women writers to be equipped with the tools to write stories or write their personal monologues from an intersectional perspective. So you have more nuanced and your stories are layered, and it also connects their real or their lived experiences with their personal monologues. And then day two, Bernice took them through the personal monologues workshop, and then they submitted their finals. What do you say? The monologues, and then we selected six to be read at the festival.
Okay.
So it's, yeah. So how Voices works is it's a two-pronged approach. One is recognizing or getting in the writers, women writers, equipping them with the tools. And the tools that we talk about here is the feminist, the intersectional, and the gender perspective. Mm-hmm. And then the second part of it is giving them the platform for them to be in part of this international literary festival where they get to showcase their writing.
You know, I was speaking to a male friend about you know, talking to you and, you know, that creating a safe space, you know, for the voices of women. And one of his first questions was, why do you need a safe space? And number two, there's no such thing as a safe space. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was infuriated. But, you know, I mean, could you explain to this male friend of mine why you even needed to create something like Voices, you know? I mean, you kind of mentioned already, like, just some harmless comments that you made. you know, that just enraged people and got you physical, you know, threats. But
yes.
Yeah, why do we need this? Why do we need safe spaces for women to actually talk about issues that are affecting them?
Okay, it's just the same way that we have women-only coaches, women-only carriages in the trains. It's because to give them a safe space, that is sort of the analogy that you can think of when we're applying to writing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So what safe space in for voices that we did, that we created? When we get all the writers together, we let them know, this is how the workshop is going to take place. It's going to be a very personal experience, because we do exercises, especially when you do the privilege walk, it's very, very personal. And also because if you want anyone to examine their lives, you have to dig really deep. You need, if you want to know the issues that have, or whatever struggles and challenges and obstacles that these women have faced in their lives that has shaped them to be the women that they are today. Or for this year's theme, it was Woman I Dream. Mm-hmm. So what challenges or struggles that they face in their life that is keeping them from becoming the women that they dream or the women that they want to be. And because this is a personal monologue writing program, we need to ensure that everyone feels comfortable, everyone feels safe, and that there is trust. Trust is what we build.
It's like the foundation, right? From which you build everything.
Yes, the foundation.
Up.
Yes, exactly. And respect. It's a mutual respect. And if you're going to disagree with something, that there are ways to disagree. We do not laugh at people's struggles, because when we are nervous, we tend to react in different ways. And some of the sharings from someone might trigger someone else. Yeah. You know, you never know. And so these are all things that we talk about, we discuss, and we also ask the workshop participants to let us know what they need from us in order for them to feel that this is a safe space. And in the real world, yes, there is no such thing as a safe space. But this is a workshop that we are talking about, a workshop that is dealing with something very particular, something very sensitive, something very personal. So you have to create a safe space. It's just like when you're going to see the doctor, you expect the doctor to keep whatever that, you know, he finds from you, he or she finds from you, personal and confidential. You do not want, you know, the doctor going talking to the attendant or to the next patient, right?
Yep.
So it's the same thing here. So what is discussed, whatever comes out during the workshop does not go out of the workshop. And this is why Voices has worked. Last year was the second year that we had the workshop. And the depth that the writings bring, it's completely different. If you read the monologues that come out of Voices, and they're only given like 2 to 3 weeks to write this.
Okay.
And in order for them to create or be able to come up with this kind of output, you know, they examine their life, like really from the different perspectives, like what was it? Is it necessarily just their gender? It could be their religion. It could be their race. It could be an economic factor. You know, it could be in a family that had only girls, and maybe just the eldest daughter had the chance to go overseas or even be able to go to university. So what happens to the younger ones?
Right.
Yeah, so these are issues. So it's not just a gender. We're not just looking at gender. With the intersectional perspective or the lens, they start examining the different intersections of their identities that have brought them to where they are or keeping them from where they want to go. And that's what we did in this safe space.
So,
safe space is not real, but we make it real. We have to create it. So yeah, you can tell your friend that.
I will. So, you know, Yasmin, do you think that calling this forum a safe space, did that have any sort of negative effect on the outcome that you were seeking from, you know, organizing such a thing?
Definitely not, because like I said earlier, safe space, which is built on trust, is actually sets the foundation for the whole Voices program. Mm-hmm. Right. During the workshop, we emphasize safe space. Day two, when we come back, we go through safe space again. And during the showcase at GTLF, before we start, we also bring back this concept of safe space to the audience, and we set certain ground rules. Like, number one, no video or audio recording of the readings, because for these writers to come up to the stage and read such personal stories and read from their heart, it's very daunting. Mm-hmm. And we also tell them not to react, not to laugh, or not to be disrespectful when the women are reading their monologues, right? Because these are stories of their lives, and we need to give them due respect. Yep. For being brave is one thing, but the other thing is actually sharing, giving a piece of their life to the audience. You know, so it is a two-way relationship. You know, the audience are there not just to listen, but also to get an insight into the lives of Malaysian women, different Malaysian women, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you are there, you should also give the same respect back to the writers, you know, by taking each of their words seriously. Right. Mm-hmm. And I go back to the word respect, because one, you have to respect one, their courage for doing that. Right.
Yep.
And also to be able to accept, you might not agree with what they're saying. You might not agree that, you know, someone faced this struggle in their life, because you did not witness that happening in your own life. But this is their experience. So we respect that.
What would you say was the response to the stories that were shared, you know, from the audience in particular?
It's been very tremendous. Voices each year has been growing, not just in the number of writers, but also the audience number. First year, we had about 50 to 70 people attending the reading session. And a lot of them were friends and, you know, my colleagues from PWDC. And then second year, we had a lot more. We had about 100 people coming in. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I always remember. This after Voices 2015, the showcase, someone came up to me and said, "Yasmin, I was so hesitant to come to this reading, because when I heard that it's, oh, women's narratives, I thought that, oh, it's going to be your usual sappy melodrama, like boo-hoo, that kind of stuff. But I am genuinely impressed at the quality of the writing and the narratives or the monologues that were read. And I was like, thank you. I will take that compliment, right? And it was about that year, it was about 60% women, 40% men. And even the men were excited, and they excited in the sense that they received it well. And they went up to the writers and they spoke to them, you know. And it was a very, very beautiful reading session. And then last year we had, I would say, close to 150 audience. It was almost full house, and the chat books were there. And once it was done, people actually rushed up to the writers asking if they signed their chat books and, you know, take photos with them. And it was, yeah. And I mean, some of them were just starting in their writing career. Some of them have been published here and there. But to get this kind of reception, and especially after pretty much bearing your soul, it is very encouraging. And it's also, like, this year what happened was at the writing workshop, there was a bit of a resistance from some of the writers. They were like, we are fiction writers. Like, what is this personal monologue? Like, can I, you know, fictionalize this part? But it was understandable where they were coming from, because to write personal monologues, it's basically you're revealing your life, mm-hmm. revealing who you are, and that is.
It's not done here, though.
It's not. Yeah, that's another thing. We Asians, we have a curtain, we have a facade, and to be honest, in your writing, it takes guts, in a way. Not really takes guts. It also, you do not know how is it going to be received.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That fear of the backlash as well.
Yeah, the backlash, and also we have this strong sense of family and, you know, friends, and we need to jaga muka, and there's so many things that it is involved when it comes to, you know, the Asian culture. And finally, when the big breakthrough did happen, it was amazing, because these writers who were having challenges mm-hmm. in even grasping that concept of personal monologue, and they really dug deep, and they wrote very, very personal narratives, very personal stories, and you could see the change in them as persons, right? And I do hope that, you know, later, you know, in the future, I will see these writers exploring more personal narratives, more memoir type writing, because right now, if we were to look at how do we know the lives of Malaysian women unless Malaysian women are writing about their lives?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this was in a safe space. I mean, I keep going back yeah. to that phrase. So do you know if the ladies who were involved, the women who were involved, mm-hmm. they took that to sort of like an unsafe space? Did they? From the experience of working in the mm-hmm. workshop, in the forum, did they go on to sort of talk about their stories to a wider audience, you know?
I believe some of them did. Because these stories, they were actually in a chapbook which people could buy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And they were sold at the festival bookshop. So it did already go out, you see. Mm-hmm. But these are all women who are still continuing to write, and they're writing fiction. And I do not know where this will take them. But even if they do not write personal narratives, they still have that intersectional perspective that was given to them, because that one day intensive gender and intersectional workshop that we go through. So this is where, besides the showcase and producing of the personal monologue, giving them, going through that workshop was basically to equip them with this tool, so that when they do sit down and write even a piece of fiction or a sci-fi or an alien fantasy, whatever,
yeah,
they will have, I mean, they do not need to have a completely, you know, perfectly wonderful feminist, you know, world that they build, but they would be able to write their stories in from an intersectional perspective. So when they're writing or developing characters, the characters are a lot more layered and nuanced. They're not just stock characters with, you know, template lives or plots that they go through.
Yeah. And I think, you know, working together with women, as you said, in a safe, as I like to say, in a safe space, that sort mm-hmm. of gives you the courage to critique each other, because, you know, it's not coming from a bad place. It's all coming just to sort of like, it's a collective self-improvement sort of exercise.
Yes, it is true. But in terms of critique, right, that's another thing that we do talk about in the safe space. When you critique a work, you do not go personal.
Of course not. Yeah.
Because in a non-safe space, it tends to get personal, yeah. You know, right?
As you know, as you've experienced, right?
Yeah. It tends to get personal. So here what we do is you critique the work itself.
Exactly. Right? Exactly what I imagined happened. Yeah.
Exactly. So if you think that, you can give your opinion, say, you know, I think that if you were to write this from, if or you were to explore this aspect of your narrative, it would be stronger. And those were the kind of critiques that we make or we give, you know. And Bernice is an amazing person who, you know, has so much experience working with women and women writers and giving doing writing workshops with women that, I mean, she, when she does her writing workshop, it's, you don't have to worry that, oh, she's going to, you know, be offensive or be...
Or cut me to pieces.
Yeah, exactly. You know, she's very nurturing. She is so nurturing in her working, in her writing workshop. It's and she's so positive and she's very encouraging. And the fact that it is Bernice herself running the writing workshop actually means a lot to these writers.
And yeah. You know, I mean, I guess moving forward from voices, you know, I mean, do you hope that, I don't know, anyone listening, for example, might actually, you know, start a little local chapter of it, you know, to get some women writers together to write about issues that are affecting them, whether it's feminist or not, you know, personal experiences, you know, and you know, how would you recommend that to anyone who's listening?
I would. I really would. And I would also encourage them to maybe take it to the next level by studying or introducing elements of feminism, principles of feminism and intersectionality into their group. As in, together you learn about intersectional feminism, about gender equality, and why it's important for these kind of platforms to exist and why women should have safe spaces in terms of, and because when we are talking now, we are talking about safe spaces in the context of writing, right?
Yeah.
And in the context of also even getting their writings published or read out in public. KL has a lot of amazing collectives doing such work. You have the poetry group doing poetry stuff, and then you have I'm quite sure there are other writers, but, you know, here in Penang, there's almost none. And that was another reason why, you know, Voices was very, something that I really felt that I needed to do, because I did not have my own community of women writers, my community of feminist writers that I could get together and, you know, come produce something. You know, yeah.
Just moving forward, what are you working on next?
What am I working on next? I'm actually looking at, because Voices was created for GTLF. It's not a program by the Georgetown Literary Festival, but it was something that I created to complement it, and which is a good thing because for the past 3 years we've been part of the festival. But I would also like to go into publishing women's stories, women's narratives. And I am looking at producing the first anthology. And I do not know how this will come out. Will I be able to work with partners and or any publishing houses to come up with a book? If not, then it might be an online platform. Okay. And so that is one of it. And when we did the first Voices, I had this whole idea, this dream of taking the narratives, going from kampung to kampung and doing readings and having it translated into Malay, having it translated into Chinese, into Tamil. And we go to the communities and we bring the stories. Yeah, because it's well and fine that, you know, the educated middle class is having access to all of this. But, you know, we also have fellow Malaysians who are living all around us who do not have access to this.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know, I suppose, but it would be interesting to see, or it would be a nice way to sort of reach out to, like you said, not the middle class educated group that not preaching to the converted as it is.
Exactly. And because these are stories, I mean, they're not, yes, they are inspirational mm-hmm. in the sense that it talks about issues that a lot of us face. You know, these are not stories of women who have made it to the top and like, hey, you know, yes, this was my struggle, but I'm here now and you can do it too. You know, this is your everyday women, because there's no single narrative for women in Malaysia. And the more we get the stories out, and then people would be encouraged to get their own stories out. Yeah, so that might be something that I would want to do, I don't know, someday when I have the funds for it, you know.
Well, I hope you do. I think that will be a wonderful program, and I would love to be part of it. But we'll see how that goes. Just to conclude, Yasmin, could we end with you maybe reading us a short piece of your own work? Something, maybe your greatest hit.
My greatest hit. Sure. Okay, I'm going to read you a poem from my little poetry book called, it's found in translation. It's a Penang Hokkien and English bilingual poetry book that I worked with one of my friends. Mm-hmm. It came out last year. And so this is one of the poems that I wrote. It's called Away.
Okay.
He walked further and further away from where she stood, forlorn, reeling from his rebuke. A tear, a single drop, solitary in its defiance, rolled down her left cheekbone, chiseled just like her mother's. The sun glazed through the wetness of her eyes, breaking the light into a million sparkles, turning him into nothing more than a speck in a profusion of light. Years down the road, she will recall this very moment as the time she felt a weight lift off her. She would picture the shackles falling off her ankles, the one that kept her enslaved, to his moods swinging forever the pendulum as he walked further and further away from where she stood, rejoicing in the solitude of her personhood. That's all.
Oh, that's amazing. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Tell me a bit about, you know, what made you write that, or what was the inspiration for this poem?
Okay, I actually have the photo is right on my living room wall. It was actually at, you know, there's this little rest area before the Ipoh Tunnel that you can walk up. It's a lookout point. So we were up there, and that time I was into, you know, lomography, and my husband was walking away in the distance, so I took a photo of it after I developed it and had it framed. And this just came, this poem just came, and it has no reflection on my husband or our relationship, but, you know, images evoke emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They evoke stories. Yeah. And the interesting part about this poem, because I mean, it's part of the Found in Translation project, so my friend did a adaptation of it into Penang Hokkien. And so whenever we would do the reading, I would do the reading first, and everyone, it would be pin drop silence, because, you know, it's there from the beginning itself. You know what type of poem it is.
Mm-hmm.
When he reads the Hokkien version of it, people are, every time they will giggle. The first two stanzas, they giggle. And I'm like, on stage, I'll always be like, what is going on? Oh my God. And then suddenly, silence. Just silence.
Okay.
And then once he's done, the audience it's just quiet. So I think the depth of it, the weight of what it means, it's a very, sadly to say, violence against women is so universal that everyone understands it.
So that's
a fun little bit on this poem.
And it's not based on any true story that you personally experienced?
No, my husband, but you know, we are all children of violence in a way. So we've all grown up. We've all experienced it some way or another. It's very real. So,
All right. Thank you so much, Yasmin.
Thank you, Juliet.
I've been speaking to Yasmin Bhatnanathan. She's a writer and poet. And we were discussing, you know, being a feminist writer and, you know, women's narratives and creating a safe space for women to write and to get their word out. You've been listening to Feminist Fridays on Live and Learn. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.